Praise be Jesus and Mary.
Now and forever.
We're not going to speak on the readings today. Actually, we've been, over the past couple months, we've been reflecting on the Ten Commandments, giving reflections on each of the commandments. Specifically, we've been talking about recently the Sixth Commandment regarding sexuality. As we said a few days ago, if you want to know the truths of the Church's teaching on sexuality in a nutshell, it's that one cannot lie or falsify the nature of love and the truth of the human person. To lie against the nature of love is a sin. And in this month, when the world is celebrating what is untrue about human nature and about human sexuality, it's important that we know the truth. In our last reflection, which we gave on Tuesday, we began speaking about the origins of same-sex attraction and how there are two strong environmental factors which contribute to it. There's dysfunctional parent-child relationships on one hand, and inferiority regarding peer relationships too. We're going to talk a little bit about the second one. We talked about the first one on Tuesday, so this is a continuation of something that we began earlier this week. We already talked about transgenderism last week. Now we're talking a little bit about homosexuality. Where does it come from as well? So we can get a clearer picture of same-sex attraction. Again, much of what we'll share is based on the research of a Dutch psychologist and psychotherapist, Dr. Gerard van den Aardweg. He wrote a book in the 1990s on homosexuality, published by Ignatius Press, called Battle for Normality. At the time he wrote the book, he had under his belt more than 30 years of study and therapy experience with more than 300 clients of same-sex orientation. We'll also borrow from another doctor, Dr. Richard Fitzgibbons, reflections on the origins of same-sex attraction that he wrote in the book called The Truth About Homosexuality, also published by Ignatius Press as well. And at the time that he wrote that, he had 20 years of clinical experience dealing with people with same-sex attraction. The most frequently seen cause of sadness from the past that leads to homosexual attractions in men was childhood and adolescent rejection by peers. Why? Especially because of their lack of limited athletic abilities. Many boys who have poor hand-eye coordination aren't very good in popular sports, and they end up being on the receiving end of harsh and critical treatment, basically, and rejection by their peers. Yes, children can be cruel, unfortunately. I know I used to be one, right? So some of us know what that was like back then. Because of that rejection, powerful feelings of loneliness, sadness, and isolation develop in some children. The craving for acceptance and love from peers can result in strong emotional attractions to those of the same sex, which leads some youngsters to think that they might actually be homosexual. For the most part, it's the period of adolescence that really determines same-sex attraction. Pre-homosexuals, as Dr. van den Aardweg calls them, he says they not only feel different, and different actually means inferior. And we'll note that in a minute. They not only feel different, but they also have a less boyish or girlish, less manly, less womanly demeanor than same-sex peers. And they have less gender-typical interests as well. So boys won't often like playing with sports, or they won't like competition. Girls won't like dolls, won't like dressing up, things like that. So they have atypical habits or personality traits as a result of their upbringing and parental relationships, and that creates difficulty in how they relate to peers, naturally. The boys are often over-domesticated, they're soft, they're undaring, they're weak, while pre-homosexual girls are sometimes rather aggressive, wild, maybe independent. But, and this is really what's important, it's the teenager's or the adolescent's self-perception of his masculinity or her femininity that makes all the difference. So it's how I perceive me, not how others perceive me, that matters most. Just because a boy's more timid and maybe acts more gentle or doesn't like sports or is interested in the arts, or just because a girl's more of a tomboy and maybe more independent, that doesn't mean that they're therefore homosexual. You have to ask the question, how do they perceive themselves? When pre-homosexual boys begin comparing themselves with other boys, they actually perceive themselves how? As inferior, essentially. They feel uncomfortable around same-sex companions and inferior in their manliness as well. The unmanly feeling boy doesn't identify with his maleness. Same thing, the unfeminine feeling girl doesn't identify with her feminine nature. And so they avoid what they feel inferior about. That leads them to feeling like an outsider. They feel that they don't belong. Many pre-homosexual boys had the feeling of not belonging with their fathers, their brothers, with other boys. Pre-lesbian girls had the feeling of not belonging with their mothers, with their sisters, with other girls. So not belonging, feelings of inferiority, loneliness, they're all connected, actually. Dr. Fitzgibbons says that many men and women with these painful emotional wounds may prefer believing that they're homosexual rather than face their terrible inner sadness. So they don't want to face the truth about their past. Why? Because it's too painful for them. Every boy wants to be a man. Every girl wants to be a woman. And it's precisely when they feel that they can't measure up in that way, that's when they start idolizing others' masculinity and femininity. And that's where they can get into trouble. Why? Because Dr. Vanden Aardvig says that the decisive factor for homosexuality really is in the fantasy life. So it's in the undisciplined fantasy life that people have. The feelings of not belonging can turn into passionate longings for friendship and idolization of youths who, in the eyes of the boy, maybe possess the sort of manliness that he feels he doesn't have. So the gender inferiority complex becomes the stepping stone to a variety of frustration-born sexual fantasies. As one doctor puts it, what's unknown and exotic when one's younger about their gender, meaning the masculine side of being a boy, it now becomes erotic. So the unknown and the strange or exotic becomes erotic in adolescence, particularly in the fantasy life, which is very dangerous. Here we'll quote from a more recent conference that Dr. Vanden Aardvig gave in 2018. He said, during puberty, such longings for companionship may engender erotic fantasies about physical affection from some adored but inaccessible comrade. Such daydreams spring from self-pity or self-dramatization about being lonely, having no friends, not being one of the boys. Especially when accompanied by habitual masturbation, they reinforce the boy's yearnings and nourish his self-pity and feelings like the tragic outsider. These feelings of self-pity are addictive because self-pity is actually a form of self-comforting. It's actually a form of self-medicating. There's a sort of comfort that we get with self-pity. In short, says Dr. Vanden Aardvig, homosexual partner seeking is an anxious chasing after impossible illusions stemming from puberty. It's fully self-centered. It's begging for love, demanding love, but not loving. When this craze isn't outgrown before adulthood, it may take control of the person's mind so that it becomes an autonomous drive. As a result, the homosexual person partly or even largely remains emotionally a teenager, and much of their thinking, their feeling, personality habits, relationships with parents and others, his feelings with respect to his own sex and the opposite sex as well. He never becomes mature and is dominated by immature self-love and excessive self-centeredness, especially in his same-sex cravings. As Dr. Vanden Aardvig says, that it's impossible really to separate homosexual desire from neurosis. When you read about the insecurity, the loneliness, the isolation, the guilt, the shame, the anxiety, the fear, the anger, the hostility, the depression, the despair that many with same-sex attraction experience, it does seem to fit a neurotic disorder. It used to be classified as such until contraception and the sexual revolution and the trivialization of sexual activity and the divorcing of sex from marriage and procreation, until that began influencing psychology and the medical field as well. Regarding how those with same-sex attraction say that they've been different since they were a young child, Dr. Vanden Aardvig writes this. He says, there's no need for a mythical homosexual nature to explain it. A boy with feminine habits who clings to his mother, overprotected, has no father or other manly influence in his tender childhood, he naturally would feel different when confronted with other boys who have been able to develop their boyish inclinations and interests. On the other hand, feeling different is not the dubious privilege of homosexuals. The majority of non-homosexual neurotics, says Dr. Van den Aardvig, experience that in their youth as well. In other words, there's no reason to see a homosexual disposition in it, he says. And lastly, he writes this. He says, a correct description of the psychological history of homosexuals is that they first experience the feelings of not belonging, feeling inferior to the peer group, lonely, not being loved by a parent, and so on. And it's obvious that this is why they felt depressed and were neuroticized. The homosexual longing presented itself after and as a consequence of these experiences of rejection, not before, says the doctor. So there are some other factors that lead to same-sex attraction. People mention a lot of times homosexuals were actually sexually abused when they were younger as well. Sometimes they have a lack of vulnerability towards heterosexual relationships. Sometimes it's a matter of rebellion because of anger. Sometimes it's narcissism as well. But the predominant causes stem back to those two things: dysfunctional parent relationships, dysfunctional peer relationships. Those are especially the main causes. Dr. Fitzgibbons says that the process of healing for these people is threefold. He says, one, insight-oriented psychotherapy, so to identify the origin of their conflicts. Why do I have these conflicts? You've got to understand yourself in order to grow spiritually. Two, he said, forgiveness. Three, Catholic spirituality. So it's a treatment approach very similar to how you would treat substance abuse disorders. So those who identify or struggle with same-sex attraction, many of them really have had a sad plight in life. They've had a lot of difficulty in life. So we should have compassion towards them. At the same time, though, to affirm them in their sinful choices or in their wrong thinking is sinful on our part. All it does is perpetuate the dysfunction, and it actually causes it to spread. It's actually become a worldwide cultural epidemic by now. If you want to know more about the complete picture regarding same-sex attraction, you can read Dr. Van den Aardvig's book, The Battle for Normality, published by Ignatius Press. Also, the second part of the book is a self-therapy guide for people who struggle with same-sex attraction. Also, John Harvey's book, The Truth About Homosexuality, published again by Ignatius Press. Very good. There's a lot of good material in it about the origins of homosexual attraction, but also how to approach the issue from a Catholic and pastoral perspective. So let's ask Our Lady, the spouse of the Holy Spirit, on the eve of the feast of her spouse, which is tomorrow, Pentecost. Let's ask her to really have the grace that there to be a very safe and welcoming refuge for all those who struggle with not fitting in life, all those who feel like they don't fit in, that they can turn to Our Lady, they can turn to the Holy Spirit, that they can find their true identity in Jesus Christ, especially those who are caught up in the LGBT culture. Praise be Jesus and Mary, now and forever.